to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, North Bank Station Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Just Brett Weber on the board. SP Futures up 13. Dow Futures up 122. NASDAQ Futures up 54 as we continue to shoot our way up here. Frank, how are you?
Very good. Bitcoin's flirting with 40,000 again, too.
Let's talk a bit about that. But here I am, Maddie and I, since the Dunkin' Donuts. Now it is not. Oh, by the way, Maddie, I noticed the other day, I didn't mention it to you, the one by us is actually open at this hour.
Oh, yeah, they're open at like 5:30.
I suppose we could leave you eat earlier and stop there, but I don't know if we want to or not. They're kind of, there's no drive through or anything. But anyway, so Frank, we've been reduced to pulling iced teas out of the back of the truck. But now, as you can imagine, this morning I'm sitting here sucking on an iced tea sickle, for God's sake. So maybe by the second hour, this thing, I'll be able to drink. Anyway, a little chilly this weekend, eh? Eh? As I say in Canada, hey, hoser, eh?
It was 9 below when I got up yesterday morning.
Yeah, what is the hype about everything you hear on radio now? Does it have to be the hype? Yesterday I'm wandering around at 10 to 7, going to the Menards and those kinds of things, buying filters and so forth. And all I'm hearing about is this massive wind chill. Frank, there wasn't a speck of wind anywhere yesterday morning. Where were they?
Up there was in Taylor's Park.
Just on the only wind was just on you. You had to walk.
Not probably just in my yard.
Just in your yard.
Going into what is it? The Great American Bagel.
Now, would it? It would stand to reason the big guy upstairs would have wind just for you.
Right.
Just saying. Anywho, so speaking of which, I had to listen to one of your hero guys, one of the new national. He's not the. I don't know if he's a new. He's not. Well, Fauci's still there, but he's got some big new job under the. So he's being grilled by is it Cindy Eisen or her name is, and she could be odd, but she's pretty good. And she says, so what do you anticipate, or what do you attribute the huge drop in cases in the last, 5 or 6 days? Now there might be some that would say, since we've now vaccinated a whole bunch of people. And oh, by the way, it's run through the state of California and other places, and there's like nobody left to infect. You might say something like, well, it's dropping off sort of natural. No, he stumbled around. It was all because people finally started listening to him. Where do I get an ego like this? Can you buy one at Walmart or what? People are just finally.
I have no idea.
People are finally waking up and doing like what we tell them to do, and I'm going, wow. Wow. Just saying. Anyway, Frank, we've got
a. You're a person, Tom.
What?
I'm kidding. People or a person.
Yeah, just saying, the world is odd these days, and but what'd you think of the Super Bowl? Duh, Super Bowl.
It's amazing. It was proved that you can't win with the Chicago Bears offensive line.
Take away a tackle and what, the other guy, plus they did the, I'm going to use
like every guy was playing a different position.
Yeah, I'm going to use a softball analogy. I'm not denigrating any of these coaches because these guys are at the top of their field. But I always found that if you're missing a guy, even if it's a playoff game, find somebody, even if he's not as good, to play that position and leave everybody else where they're comfortable. The last thing you want to do is move 4 or 5 people. And they moved.
Everybody had a different assignment.
Everybody had a different position. Game. Of course, the right tackle went out too. Maybe what happened to him?
I don't know, but that was Nowski is making the league minimum.
Well, but I'm saying the left guy was out. He's the guy who blew the Achilles, right?
Yes,
that's the left tackle. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
sure.
So what happened to the other guy?
I don't know. I didn't know the right tackle was out.
Oh, you know what? I think they might have moved him to the left tackle. Then they moved a guard to tackle. And something else, they had 3 guys out of position, one new guy. Instead of just saying, you're going in and playing left tackle, we'll cover for you, they moved everybody around. But, you know, those guys had good, pretty good edge rushes. We were sorry, we were not dummies, Manny. We were saying last week that defense, that middle linebacker, is he? He's a Brian Urlacher runner, that kid on...
Shaq Barrett?
No, the guy in Tampa. White, or was his name?
I'm not sure who you're talking about. But Shaq Barrett, the linebacker that was in the backfield all night, and then he can also cover receivers and tight ends out of the run routes. That guy was unbelievable last night.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, the guy in the middle went and he got a couple of guys out in the flat, like he used to be able to like backs in motion. He like met him at the line of scrimmage. They said he had Romo said he had like 4.4 speed for a linebacker or something.
Wow.
But they played well and their corners played well. And what is with the Kansas City? Did the league finally say you can't let these guys hold everybody down the field? Because Romo was saying that's been their shtick all year.
It's been the shtick in every Super Bowl that I've seen, which is 53.
Well, remember, the first one wasn't known as the Super Bowl.
Right.
Now, when I use the numbers,
now, Belichick's first win with the Super Bowl and... Brady's first win, they were tackling players. The defensive backs were literally just tackling them, the wideouts, the receivers.
Well, the interesting one, I don't know if you saw it or were paying attention that second. I wasn't paying attention the whole way, but they called a guy for holding, and he, of course, is mouthing, and they're going crazy. And Romo says, well, that's just their style. And they showed the guy on the other side of the field that didn't get called. He did the exact same thing, and he didn't get called. I mean, did you see that one, Matty, that replay? Or was the other guy? It's just every time the guy went to make a cut, they're grabbing his elbow, grabbing his jersey. Now, did they get away with that all year? They must have.
Everybody gets away with it.
That was a little more.
But the one we saw, I think it was the last penalty of the half, it was 40 yards away, you know, all the way across the field.
Well...
One thing I thought was interesting is, do you notice that they never call a uncatchable pass anymore? Like, there was a couple of pass interferences that went Tampa's way that were clearly pass interferences, but the ball was so overthrown, there was a time when they would you know, give the signal, you know, uncatchable pass, and they would wave the penalty off. They never do that anymore. I don't think I've seen that in, like, 5 years.
I think I saw it a couple times, Matty, where the ball was out of bounds.
Obviously not last night.
No,
you're
no.
saying this year you saw
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
The one where the defender fell and clipped the receiver's heel down on, like, I don't know, the 10 or 11.
Yeah,
that was overthrown.
That one was one of them that was way uncatchable, and then the other one was Brady threw one way out of the back of the end zone, and it was clearly pass interference, but the ball was so uncatchable. There was a time that they would have waved it off. They don't do that at all anymore.
Well,
I don't think.
A couple of them though were. They were holding penalties like way before the ball was thrown. I mean, they weren't pass interference.
Well, that's going to get called no matter what. Yeah.
Well, the referee came on the one where the guy clipped the guy's leg, and he said, you know, there have been some unbelievable catches this year where guys have laid out and grabbed the darn thing. He says, you can't say that guy with two more steps with a big dive couldn't have caught that thing. That's a real tough judgment you want to make as a ref.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. I'm not saying that they should do it every time, but I mean, it's just. I'm just saying it's an observation. I just don't. Yeah. I don't think I saw it. I don't think I've seen that penalty called in 5 years, or that penalty waved off for an uncatchable pass.
The two times I saw it this year, I don't know what games I was watching. Maybe both times the ball was out of bounds, so I think you got to call that.
Yeah,
but
and I think all the holding were probably the result of the guys playing out of position.
Maybe so. So what would the parlay would have been? What, the under and obviously the Tampa Bay and the under.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, with the live betting as big as it is now, when the Chiefs fell behind early, I think those sports books made even more money than they've ever made before because everyone was putting money on the Chiefs to come back because they were getting good odds, and then the Chiefs fell behind even more, and then people were betting even more on the Chiefs to come back, and they just never got anything going. I mean, they didn't score a touchdown the whole game. Who would have ever thought in a million years the Chiefs wouldn't have one touchdown?
Well, did you, I don't know how closely you watched. I was actually enjoying watching the Bulls the other night, and they give you the second half line now at halftime?
Yeah, one of their sponsors, PointsBet, that's part of the deal, yeah. So they do that as a sponsored thing.
So, We're a long way from Paul Hornung and those guys getting suspended for a year for just being seen with a gambler, aren't we?
Or Eddie DeBartolo not being allowed to buy the White Sox.
Yeah. Well, what? The Bulls were up by, I think they were up 16 at the half. So what do you suppose the second half line was? If you saw it.
Probably Orlando by, or maybe the Bulls by like 3. I don't know.
It was Orlando by 13 and a half.
Oh, 13. Oh, is that much?
Wow. Yeah.
They stuck to the game line.
Well, they just thought that Orlando was going to come back. You know, I mean, the Bulls might win, but they were going to win by close. Because they're up 16, and they ended up winning by 20 or something.
They won by like 30. Yeah.
30, and they never looked back. But most of the time, in basketball, the team that's down is the favorite in the second half, right?
Yes. Depending upon the line. I mean, the line going into the game. If Orlando was favored by like 7.5 or something, and the Bulls are up by 16, then they're absolutely going to make Orlando a huge favorite. But if the Bulls were favored by, you know, 11 and the Bulls are up by 9, then the Bulls are going to be favored probably by 1.5 or 2 in the second half.
That's how long do you get to bet that? I mean, I was, you know, in halftime, when you...
Yeah, you well, if you want to get the second half bet, they post it basically a minute or two after it goes to half, and then you have that 10 minutes or 15 minutes to bet it. But then there's live lines as well that adjust back and forth after every basket.
So it's not like the racetrack where the minute the bell goes off, all the machines lock.
Well, it locks for your second half bet, but then you can live bet.
I mean, is it officially when the ball goes in and somebody touches it, it's done?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
They should have a bell like they do at the racetrack. Just saying.
The referee's whistle.
Yeah. Well, it's so we got the S&P's up 12. What do you make of last week after a really horrible week? Then we had a great week, Frank, and we have. Janet Yellen was on yesterday, and I can't listen to her. I don't want to go through that again. And she's talking about how I sent you that article that if they pony up this. I have no idea where she gets this, or she's just talking out of her behind or something. She said if we pass the $1.9 trillion deal, and that by next year. We should be back to employment where we were. The end of next year, we should be back to employment the way we were.
I don't think she said that. She said we could.
Okay. All right.
Well,
so
that's just like Trump saying.
Some people say.
It's politics speak.
I'm just like Trump. No, I don't get.
She didn't say we would be.
I don't get to play as much golf as Trump. I'm not like Trump.
No, but we did agree that. If we played as much as Trump did in the past 4 months, we could break 110.
I thought that it's not so much that he played so much golf, is that he spent his entire campaign ragging on Obama for playing golf. Right?
Well, and not being a citizen.
Yeah, not being a citizen. I don't know about, if you're going to redo the Constitution, I don't see how the hell, of course, I don't know if I'd want him there, but, the idea that Arnold couldn't be president is kind of crazy. I mean, the guy's been here.
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't born here. But he's a governor. He's everything else.
Well, if he was 275 years old, he could run, because I think he could have been born outside the States.
He could have been grandfathered in. Yeah, well.
Yeah.
But, see, I mean, the economics of this, and the thing is this, as you know, this really... sets me aflame intellectually, is these guys are seriously playing with fire on this stuff. So if you take what Janet said, the ignorant thing that she said, is, well, two issues here. One is, if that's the truth, then she's leading people to believe that if we just made it $6 billion, we could ever be back to work like next week. And it's just not true, right? It's just not true. I mean, the cycle has a cycle, and we've got people off, and the idea of getting them back, we're a long way from that. But then...
She did bring up the vaccines, you know, being used and applied to everyone.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm just...
It's not just the money. There was a caveat about vaccines.
Okay. But and now that the fighting goes on, I don't know, you say stuff like this, but I learned an awful lot when I was on the board of the CBOE. And it's individual people zero in on people that are like them and any kind of thing that they do, the abuses that they do. I mean, you could be at a board meeting and we could talk about you know, some firm crossing a bazillion orders, and essentially creating, in my mind, creating, you know, doing felonies all over the floor. You know what I'm talking about. And yet, we could never deal with that because that was big firms. We didn't know how to spank them. We didn't want to. Yet all you had to do is lob something out there about Matty Weber being over position limit, like by five contracts 4 days in a row. Oh my God, he's a recidivist. We better flog him in the town square. We better like suspend the guy. Who gave a rat's behind if Matty was, instead of 2,500 contracts, had 2,510? Didn't do anything to the market, didn't do anything to anybody. Who cared? And yet, but that's, I won't use the term small minds, but zero in on the smallest stuff. Cause here's a guy just like them getting away with something. Where they really can't compete with the Bember firm that's walking to a crowd and doing something illegally and stealing 20 grand from a client. You know, they're not gonna do that. You can't deal with that. Plus, when the SEC in their infinite wisdom decided to have competition among exchanges, the competition came and who wasn't gonna enforce the rules, right? And that was never addressed. But anyway, I wander off. But look at this $1.9 trillion. Out of all the stuff you've heard, I mean, again, this is just one person listening. I want you guys either criticize or agree. Out of all the stuff you heard, what percentage of the bitching about the deal has been for individual people getting their check when maybe they don't deserve it? And nobody says a word about the 160 billion going for masks and stuff and who got that contract, and nobody cares about the airline still getting paid, you know, full bore instead of having unemployment like everybody else. Nobody pays any attention to any of that stuff because it's above their pay grade. Instead, they zero in, and should the guy getting the $1,400 check, what if he has four kids and now he's up to 150 grand, how he shouldn't deserve it? You know, maybe he doesn't, but that is what? That's a pimple on the ass of an elephant in that bill, isn't it? But that's what,
yeah.
I'm going to say it's 90% of what I've heard. Now, what have you guys heard? Am I 90% too high?
Yeah, 90% is too high. It's probably 38%, the same number percentage of Republicans that believe in QAnon.
But I'm saying nobody's even mentioned what's this $160 billion doing going for masks and didn't we already buy? Didn't Trump buy 700 million vaccines?
I haven't read that. I'm not sure what it is.
Well, it was
I'll
part,
look it up.
But that was part of the Republican was the exact same number when they knocked the $1.9 trillion down to like $900 billion. It's the $160 billion for vaccines, distributions, those kinds of things were still in there. The Republicans pulled out the part about the states. They don't want to bail out, you know, horrible states like Illinois. I understand why. And what else they bailed out? But all the key stuff, airlines and all the drug companies. I mean, Trump bought 700 million vaccines, didn't he? How many more do you need? Even if you double it at 20
well,
bucks
it looks
a bit.
Like AstraZeneca doesn't work.
It doesn't seem like it wants to work on the new strain in South Africa. Is that what you read?
It's going to be here.
Yeah?
If you believe anything else, you're dreaming. There's no way we could stop it.
Well, it probably already is
with
here.
AstraZeneca.
Probably already is here, but only the other... They all seem to do the same thing. You wonder why one would work and one wouldn't. Now, the question is, if somebody gets the vaccine or somebody has the old virus, like me, for instance, and a new one comes by to you, are you susceptible to it on the same level, or is it a mild case?
I don't think they know, Tom.
But when are they
I know that? Doctors who have had COVID who are going to take the shot.
I've also heard that a lot of doctors say you shouldn't take both of them. You should take one of them. You don't need two.
They're the same guys that will prescribe you hydrocodone when you have a backache.
Well, I don't really complain so much about
that. Nobody knows.
Well, the thing of it is, we don't want to know, Frank. We don't want to know. We want to keep this mix of misinformation somehow going. Did I send you the one? I just got a big coronavirus thing where these guys did that was a test they just did. They were talking about how long it takes the viral load and how big of a difference the viral load makes and whether or not you can give it to somebody else. And of course, they got all these mathematical numbers. I'm reading this thing. It turns out it's a big deal. according to this test. They tested it was pretty specific. They somehow found 700 and some people, however many people they found had COVID, like 30 of them. They found it very early stage, and they did the tracking on them, and they found out that the people they came in close enough contact with to infect was like 729. And in fact, out of the 729, some number got it, and they went through the whole different list of people of who can't. In other words, if I had it and I went out with you and had a beer and you got it, okay, now you're in the positive side. But if I went out with five people and they didn't get it, then they're testing me every day in terms of my viral load. And you know, I don't read anything like this from the U.S. This, of course, is from Britain, because there are other people are actually trying to figure out stuff instead of just keeping people in this circle jerk of misinformation. And they start going along.
Hence the need at the beginning for a Marshall Plan.
Well,
we decided we did not care about the data.
The only problem is
they dumped it on the states and didn't fund it.
The only problem
then stopped it, basically.
But you know what you need, Frank? And I'm going to push back big time. You know what you need before you have a Marshall Plan?
A plan?
No. You need Marshall.
No, there are people that could have done it.
Name one.
The administration did not want to do it.
Name one. Name one that you know of that would be totally apolitical and everybody would respect the guy to just do his job and not listen to anybody. Name one.
Nielsen could have done a job on it.
I mean, Dan Inouye's dead. He's the guy you would pick.
No. Oh, you mean pick to run it?
Yeah.
Well, give me a few minutes, I'd come up with somebody. There's people out there. It's better than Mike Pence.
I'm saying the reason why the Marshall Plan was effective is because it was Marshall.
Oh, I don't know. He was an impressive person.
You think?
But then I won't say Marshall. I should say we needed a comprehensive plan then.
Which
was not there. And you needed the science side to put it together and say, what data do we need?
Well, anyway, to finish my story real quick, this study basically said that you can tell the amount of viral load in the people that were the bigger spreaders. It was like that under a certain number where the people still had COVID and they, you know, might have symptoms, might not, probably did, they infected like nobody. But over the top, that's what I talk about, these super spreaders, they actually would said that it's 1 to 10 times something amount of whatever cells are, and every time whatever the number is, some people have like 10 times the viral load than others, and the amount of spreading they do versus other people. They came into the exact same number that we talked about months ago, that 65 to 70% of the people that have had COVID, me included, I think, have spread it to nobody. That virtually everybody gets it from like 30% of the people. It's interesting. I don't know what you do about it, but you know where Marshall got his big acclaim when he was like a lieutenant I don't even think he was a captain. What he did in World War I is the reason why the big day where the Americans finally started fighting over there against the Germans, that the French just wanted the Americans to do the same stupid thing they were doing and run out of trenches at machine guns. The American generals were like, "We're not doing that. We're not doing that to our people. You guys are idiots." So they decided to have the Americans look like they were in one spot on one of the first division. They looked like they were one spot on the front in the morning, and move the entire division on this 2-lane dirt road to another spot and attack in the afternoon. And they said the only guy that could pull that off, even though he was only a lieutenant, was Marshall. And somehow or another, with ox carts and everything else on the road, he moved an entire division like 25 miles, and they attacked somewhere else later in the day, and the Germans got totally caught off guard. And they had a huge day for the first division and blah, blah, blah. And the best quote I think I've ever heard about wartime was, they said to Marshall, "This is the greatest day ever." And he goes, "9 of my best friends are dead. Why is it a good day?" Even though they had this massive victory, he goes, "9 of my best friends are dead. Why is this a good day? What's the matter with you?" I mean, how's that for a comment, Matty?
Yeah.
I mean, oh, yeah, we won.
Here's a bit of trivia. My uncle from South Bend was the person who shot the first American artillery shot of World War I.
Wow.
and he spent the rest of his life working for the government selling war bonds.
God. Well, you know, is he still getting, are you still getting part of that pension?
No, not me. I'm not in that direct line.
Oh, all right. You know, how come back in the day, the I'm talking way back in the day, not our day, Civil War and those other wars, that the pension was sprinkled to the guy's kids?
If probably look, incentive for people to not run away to the United States to avoid wars. That was a lot of our immigration.
Well, yeah, I suppose. All right, Frank, we've got SP's up 12. Are we going to have another rack 'em and roll 'em week this week? Are we more money in the system? The market just keeps going up or what? Some of these prices that are jumping, there's stocks that are moving 5 and 10% a day just on somebody saying something on TV. I mean, this is so much like 99 for some of these stocks, and I sure don't want the same ending there, do you?
No, but it will be. And before you know what's going to happen is they're going to come up with some reason to close down the market, and where the traders like you and me, I had huge positions in 2001 on 9/11. Closed down for 2 weeks. I didn't get to make money because my puts never came into play. They do whatever they can do to disappoint us. The largest number of people in the shortest period of time.
All right, so when they
protect the rich guys.
When we only have
this week, we're going to still go up. Why would you bet against it?
I'm
doing it.
Yeah, I'm not betting against it. Although I am thinking these bonds are going to keep trickling down. At some point, that's going to be a problem. I mean, whatever tax increase Biden's got in the back of his brain is not going to be enough if the interest rates go back to 4%. That'll suck up his entire tax increase.
And then some.
These numbers are so onerous. How come nobody talks about it? They just don't want to, or what? We'd rather talk about Kim Kardashian's new bikini or whatever?
No, not at all.
You don't like? Well, thanks, Frank. We'll talk to you later in a week.
Okay. Thank you.
He evidently doesn't like Kim Kardashian. I wouldn't know her if she walked by me, Maddie. Who is she? She's just somebody famous for being famous, or what?
Pretty much.
Oh, God.
She had a TV show for a long time, the reality show.
That could be you, being famous for being famous. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 34. Back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 12 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 37.50. Dow futures up 137. In Europe, we've got the DAX up 39.3%. The FTSE, however, they were lagging last week, but not today. Up 65 points, that's a full 1%. Back around up 39.7. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 609, that's 2%. These guys are loving it. Shanghai up 36, 1%. And Hang Seng lagging over there, only up 30.1%. China announces new anti-monopoly rules aimed at tech giants. Not sure exactly what that is, but we will find out one of these days. On Friday, we had the Dow up 92, S&P was up 15, and NASDAQ up 78. So Friday was not as wild a day as they were the rest of the week, but still it ended up a strong week strong. Bonds up one basis point to 1.19. One positive 0.01, we get some up to minus 0.42. Japan, wow, look at this. Positive 0.067, that has to be the highest in years over there. Oil up 864 cents, 57.49. Brent up 70 cents, 60.04. Natural gas up 9 cents, 295. RBOB up another 2 cents to 166. I still got, gas was like 250 maybe. So the spread between RBOB and the gas you're buying is like 85 cents in the burbs, which is pretty darn cheap when you figure how much of that's tax. So what are these guys making? 30 cents to get it all the way from New Jersey to here? You know, that's not so much.
Yeah.
Gold up 730, 1820. Silver up 18 cents, 27.20. Why didn't silver this on Friday? Just to piss me off. Copper up 1 penny, 363. Platinum over up 33 bucks. That's 2.9%. What do you got for? Oh, wait a minute, man. You know what they got up here now? The cryptos. I don't know, I want to go through this every day, but Bitcoin's up 979 to 39,277. Ethereum I've heard of. What's XRP? What's Litecoin? And what's Litecoin?
I know Litecoin. I don't know the was it XRP?
Is that it's only 43 cents.
I don't know that one. I know the other ones you mentioned. Ethereum and Litecoin have been around for a while.
So India might ban private cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and develop a national digital coin. Isn't that the same thing as your currency?
I would think so.
What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a major issue already on the Stevenson. Apparently a water main broke earlier this morning, and that's on on the inbound side just before California. It has the right lane closed with crews on the scene dealing with that. So I-355 to Lakeshore Drive on the Stevenson is now 45 minutes and climbing. From the Tri-State, it's 36 minutes. The right lane will be closed most of the day while crews work on repairing the water main break and getting that cleaned up. So expect solid traffic on the inbound Stevenson all morning. If you can avoid it, I would do so. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford so far this morning. Outbound Stevenson looks okay, but as I mentioned, the inbound side is already backed up. Eisenhower looking good. Edens and Kennedy all quiet. Off the expressways, a couple of issues to report. It looks like Mannheim Road between Armitage and Grand Avenue out west is closed due to a structure fire that is involving significant cleanup with crews on the scene there. So Mannheim Road, a busy road out in the western suburbs, is closed. South of there, 55th Street at East Avenue, there is a crash. And then out in the western suburbs, North Avenue on the westbound side between Glen Ellen Road and Bloomingdale Road is closed due to an accident. So a few sort of straggling accidents out there. But for the most part, outside of the Stevenson, we're looking okay. Weather today, another cold day, cloudy skies, a high of 15. And then we'll expect it to get some snow later on this afternoon into the early evening. Could get 1 to 3 more inches on top of the cold and ice that we already have. So that's not great. Right now it's overcast and 5 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 76. Right now it's clear and 46. In sports, Super Bowl last night saw Tampa get a lead early and then just keep piling on as they ended up blowing out the favorite Kansas City Chiefs 31-9. Tom Brady wins the MVP. It was Tom Brady's 7th Super Bowl championship. He now has more Super Bowls than any franchise in NFL history, passing his 6 with the Patriots, and then the Steelers have 6 as well. But Brady has 7. No one's ever done that before. Taking a quick look at his stats, was 21 of 29, 201 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. He was basically perfect. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes really struggled. 26 of 49, 270 yards, most of those coming in garbage time, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions, just a 52 QB rating. He was clearly banged up with that toe issue, but didn't play well either way. Tampa Bay, your Super Bowl champs, Chief. NBA basketball, real quick. Bulls were off last night. They'll host Washington tonight at 7 p.m. Suns beat the Celtics 100-91. And in hockey, the Blackhawks are playing better. They doubled up the Stars 2-1.
Chief. So is there actually a basketball game tonight?
There is a basketball game tonight, yeah.
I remember when, hey, John, how are you? I remember when the toss-up always was, this is before Webby, what was the quietest sports night of the year, the Monday after Super Bowl or the day after the All-Star game?
Yeah, there's a lot of sports the day after the Super Bowl. I mean, college basketball, NBA, there's hockey. But the day after the All-Star game, there is nothing. The Major League Baseball All-Star game?
Well, way back when the Hard
Rock... There's no other sports going on.
Well, Hard Rock first opened in Chicago, right? And so you couldn't get near the place. I mean, there was a line, and you know, I think half people were just buying T-shirts, but there was a line to get in like every night. So all of a sudden, the day of the Super Bowl, Dr. J and I are looking for a place to... This is back when Bridge was still, before she was a judge, still working at a law. We had the greatest deal going. She didn't get off to work till like 8 o'clock. So we'd go work out, we'd go grab dinner somewhere, and we'd get a dinner for her to go, and we'd pick her up on the way back through the loop. Say, hey, why don't we go to the Hard Rock? Won't be anybody there tonight. There wasn't. There wasn't a soul in the place. It was snowing the day after the Super Bowl. So to say there was, the two of us, I mean, you could not, other than that, the line was literally down the block. But any restaurant you want to go to, just go the day after the Super Bowl. Just saying. Or now you can't go.
What do they have? Just like burgers? I've never been there.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. Yeah. I mean, they had other stuff. They had wings and, you know, nice appetizers and stuff. It was all right. I mean, the only one I went to was we went to lunch for there's one in the Toronto, what's the name of the stadium up there? There's a...
The old Sky Dome? I think it's the Rogers Center now.
Yeah, it's the Rogers Center. But yeah. Because we went, the people from the SIBO, we were up there for a seminar. So we said, hey, let's walk down 2 blocks. It was freezing. Well, we went to the Hard Rock, and it was cool. We got to see that place. God, is that place big. I mean, it's not just the baseball field. If they take the walls down, it's even bigger. The thing is huge. That's back when they were playing basketball in there. Well, they had the basketball set up, and they had the basketball set up like on the first baseline, like right up against the stands. So the stands were, you know, actually pretty good for basketball. And they had, you know, portable bleachers around it. The basketball court was like, it was like a stamp in the middle of this huge place. There could have been like 10 of them. Basketball courts, how big the place is. I mean, it's got a massive footprint for more than just, I mean, some of them are just like just baseball and that's it. You know, the seats start right there. Not that place. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
I tell you what, also, if you like hot dogs, in front of that place, Toronto has the world's best hot dogs. Inside, they're just regular old hot dogs, but outside, there's got to be 15 of these hot dog vendors lined up, and they let them line up outside the place. And every guy, the big thing there is not only have really good dogs and Polish or whatever, but every guy's got like 15 homemade relishes or something, and they all compete on the relishes. So the hot dog truck has like a big buffet of relishes.
I love that.
Oh, it's unbelievable. So I had one in the place, and it was, I walk out, I wasn't even hungry, and I go, wait a minute, I got to have one of these. God, was it good. And in the wintertime, there's a big park where they all, where everybody skates. Imagine that in Toronto. Well, all these guys line up next to the ice, and they sell hot dogs all winter by the ice. And Toronto's a nice little town. It's
I love Toronto.
Actually, it's not little anymore.
Yeah, it's big, but it's a great city.
Well, they they just, John, you noticed, they just surpassed Chicago in population, right? But like
Toronto? They've got a sort of a setup like Indianapolis where they've redefined the metro area and the municipal division, so it's this conglomerate that takes in a lot of extra territory that's, you know, traditionally not been part of Toronto. They were separate places, and they've been amalgamated, so that probably explains why they're you know, outclassing Chicago population-wise. Imagine if Chicago did that with Elk Grove Village and Evanston and Lincolnwood and all these other contiguous suburbs.
You can't run one by Jack, can you, Matty? You can't sneak one by Mr. Flanagan,
right,
can you?
But well, so Chief's right. Toronto passed Chicago in population for the actual city limits population a couple years ago. They now have 2.9. Chicago is 2.7. But Metro, it's still not even close. Toronto's 5.9 Metro. Chicago's 9.5.
Yeah, well, we lived up there, and when my mother remarried, my stepfather was up there doing business, so we moved up there for about 3-4 months. I actually went to Toronto first grade.
Really?
Yeah, we were in a place called Don Mills, and I didn't even know this happened, but I was driving around up there because I had to go see a business client when I was there, and I drove through a place in the middle of Toronto is now Don Mills. So, like you say, they annexed all the burbs.
Right, Natticoke, Ancaster, there were Hamilton, all these towns that are, they were separate cities with open space between them back in the 19th century, and now they've just, you know, swarmed together. So it's a smart move on their part. I think it really helps, you know, to govern the city and to get tax money.
So do you think Oak Park would think it'd be a smart move to be annexed by Chicago?
not to Oak Park.
I don't know about that one, Manny. What do you think? I think you'd have to do that with an armed assault of some kind. But I mean, this Chicago's got trouble. I mean, they do. So the my buddies, the guys from Hey Jackass, that do all the murder stuff. They now have got the carjacking a meter going.
Well, that must be hard to keep track of. Boy, it's like.
Well, you know, it's the same thing, though. 4% of the people have been arrested. And if you look at this thing, but you know what they've done in for political correctness, evidently, they got so much other stuff on the page, they've gotten rid of the shot in the ass-o-meter and the shot in the junk-o-meter. They just tell you what body, you know, what part of the body you got shot. They used to have a shot in the ass-o-meter they'd keep track of. I don't know. The shot in the junk doesn't sound good. Just saying. But no, it's the same thing. There's so many more carjackings than there were last year. It's the same percentage of people that, you know, everybody thinks it's, you know, it's on the Gold Coast and everything, which it is. But a real lot of them is just people in the hood where they just take somebody's beater and go use it for a robbery. And it's not even, you know, it's not even a nice car.
Right. It's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, if you're filling your tank or if you're, you know, pausing at a stoplight or whatever else, you're fair game, it seems. So.
Well, how do we get rid of, I mean, and I know on a personal level, I think she's actually pretty nice, but what is with all these people, Jan, that they don't, it was like, I was arguing with your buddy Frank, and he said, why don't we have a Marshall Plan for COVID? I said, because we don't have a Marshall.
A Marshall, right. I mean, you're right, Tom.
I mean, it's...
We don't have anybody close to a Marshall.
No, we don't. Or if we do, they're so beat up that they...
Right. They're staying away from everything. You know,
Jan, I'm gonna say that Republican and Democrat alike, this last year, I've told the story before, the young people that got elected to House of Representatives, they were on 2 weeks in a row on, I don't know if it was Face the Nation or the other one, and I don't think I've ever been more impressed by five people... Or by 10 people, even both sides. I heard the Republican guys and ladies because I was driving and I heard them on the radio. I actually saw the Democratic ones. The lady I felt sorry for is this black lady. She's on there and she had such a horrible cough she couldn't even really speak. But she was did two or three tours in Afghanistan. The decorated soldier was a lawyer. Had come out and gone to school in the GI Bill and had some really good job. And I'm sitting there going, wow, she's impressive. These other two people are very impressive. Then there was this guy who was really, really smart, but he looked just like Putin. So I don't know if that's where that's gonna take him in life, but could have been Putin's kid. The Republicans I didn't get a chance to see, but they were every bit as, what happens to these people after two terms in Congress? Do they either get co-opted or they quit or something? I mean, somehow or another, There's it's like people entering the abyss of hell and coming out the other side, Pelosi, you know, or something like that. How does that even happen to regular people?
Well, you know, you've talked on the show, and I agree with you completely about the way, you know, committee appointments are handled or denied, and the people who get them are hardly the ones that you really want in those slots. If you were looking, you know, at just qualifications to bring something to the table, it's all about favors, and people see that, and after, you know, one term, they hang it up because they know that the whole system is going to take them decades to get, you know, closer to power, and who wants to hang around people with real power that way for very long at all? So you go back and you find something else to do with your life. It's and you look at now with the Democrats, you're stripping a Republican congresswoman of her committee appointments. That's kind of unprecedented too. So it's getting worse, not better. So,
well, every group seems to be doing it worse without anywhere near the logic that says if I make it worse, if these guys win the next time, it'll even be worse, and I'll be the bad guy. I mean, at least there should be some common sense there.
Right, right. Well, and if I could just put my 2 cents in about impeachment, Tom, because today we're starting a trial. And, you know, whoever crafted the idea of impeachment in the Constitution really was, or whoever they were, I'm sure it wasn't just one person, but it was quite brilliant because at one time the threat of impeachment was considered more than enough to keep people in line. And all you had to do was have that sword hanging over, you know, a politician as a way of showing them who really wielded the power around here. And what happened in 1868, you know, it was such a horrible misfire and showed the, you know, incredible divisions in the country, and it went on for months and months. Everybody was so horrified at how that played out, and it really kind of gave rise to the whole Jim Crow era, too. They stayed away from impeachment for more than 100 years. And then, you know, in the case of Nixon, I think that's the one time impeachment worked the best, because you didn't even have to have a full vote in the House for articles of impeachment. It just, in the committee, Nixon saw the way the wind was blowing, and the country clearly would have been behind convicting him in an impeachment trial, and his own party was abandoning him, too. But just the threat of having an impeachment vote made Nixon resign, first time a president had ever resigned in history. Every impeachment since then has been just a devaluation of the process, and it's now become utterly meaningless. It's not a threat at all. And now you've got it where even the Chief Justice doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
How do you have the trial without him there? He's supposed to be the...
You know, in standard times, that would have been a signal to everybody, well, then this is a non-starter. We've got to put this one to bed because there's no way it's going to happen. Instead, they just, you know, find a senator to, you know, change his robes and become the presiding officer for this. Well,
who's going to preside?
Before we're through, we'll have Oprah or Jimmy Kimmel or somebody else being the presiding officer. If you don't have the Chief Justice, there's really no way around it, but that's been thrown to the winds, too. So we now have a completely useless enforcement tool, and I think all it does is really embolden bad leaders, because they realize that they can always make impeachment look like something that's totally partisan instead of being for the good of the country, where the country is really endangered by some horrible person. And every, you know, the last three impeachments, including this one, are anything but that. I mean, you got 65% of Republicans in the AP poll who think that Biden wasn't legitimately elected. Well, this is a hell of a time then to have an impeachment trial of Trump when he's not even in office, and you don't even have the Chief Justice presiding. What tools do we have to keep anybody in line?
Enlighten me here. Well, if there's an impeachment trial, how did the Chief Justice say no?
Well, you know, there's no provision in the Constitution for a Chief Justice even to opt out. But if the Chief Justice does opt out, I don't think you can have an impeachment trial that's constitutional. It doesn't pass the smell test. But nobody's even having that discussion now. Nobody's even thinking about that or talking about it. But I got to believe that, you know, once you throw that provision out the window, you have no way of having a truly constitutional impeachment that's going to pass the smell test the next time.
You
have a useless tool now that's going to be used for purely partisan purposes to snub the voters who like the person who's being impeached. It's really an attack on those people and not the candidate. So it's been warped beyond belief, and it's a damn shame. I mean, the biggest victim here isn't Trump. It's the whole concept of impeachment as a tool to keep people in line. So I'm kind of I'm disturbed about it, to say the least.
Okay, we'll get back to this in a second. We need a mini poll from you two mavens. Is this going to be the top? Tesla buys $1.5 billion in Bitcoin.
Wow.
$1.5 billion?
Yeah.
Well.
How many Bitcoins is that at $40,000?
I have no idea.
Yikes. Well, there's some signal being sent there, I guess.
real quick, I'm going to talk about Bitcoin. I want to go back to this impeachment thing because it really sets in with my view of what's happening all over the place here. But what happens, how big and what happens to the people who got into Bitcoin, 8 years ago with $20 and now forgot their password? What happens to all that Bitcoin? Why can't you get your password back? I don't know anything about it. I'm asking the question.
Well, probably, eventually it's like the stuff that ends up in your safe deposit box when you stop paying the rental on it, or you die, nobody knows who owns it, and it is cheap to the state, and then it becomes something that the state auditor will parcel out to the heirs or whatever else, I suspect.
Well,
it can take decades to resolve. But
the Bitcoin people have your name?
I'm not sure they do.
No, I don't think so. No, not at all. It's supposedly untraceable. There is no name involved. It would just be like if you left money in the walls of a house and you died or you forgot about it or something and someone else found it. If they got it, it's their money.
So it's not a stock certificate or a savings bond or anything like that.
Right.
It's just stuff.
It's anonymous.
The bearer
yeah.
has it, so.
And the example you're talking about, there's a famous example that I would encourage anyone to Google because it's pretty interesting, but apparently someone had a ton of Bitcoin back when it was basically worthless, 10, 15 years ago, and now it would be worth something like $100 million what this person had, but they had a password, they had it all on a password protected drive of some kind that had one of those like terminating qualities to the password. So you basically get, 7 tries to get it, and if you don't know the password, then it destroys all the contents in the drive.
Whoa.
So this guy is, I guess he's used something like 4 or 5 attempts, and he knows he only has 2 or 3 left, and he cannot remember the password. And so all day, every day, can you imagine? He's laying in bed trying to rack his brain, knowing he's got 2 or 3 chances left. It almost sounds like a movie, like it can't be real.
Twilight Zone episode.
But
yeah.
Who decides, who decides, when I say who, it's not like an all, if I don't remember it and I hack around for 7, and all of a sudden 4 days later I'm moving and I pull out a sack at the bottom of the dresser and somehow or another I was drunk one night, which I hope I'm never that drunk, and wrote it down on the sack, and now it's after my 7 times, how are they to tell me I had to forfeit it now that I have it?
Well, Bitcoin is not telling you to forfeit anything. My understanding is that person made a choice to put it under a password protected
right.
thing like that. So it has nothing to do with Bitcoin.
But I'm saying, if you put
$100 million in a safe and said, this safe will blow up if you try 7 times and don't do it, you don't have to do
okay,
that.
Okay, so Bitcoin's not saying that.
Right.
It's this other outfit saying that.
No, it's,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
So Bitcoin, you can just keep trying until you get it.
Yeah, Bitcoin is just a finite number of cryptos out there, apparently, and it's fair game, whoever wants them.
Does anybody believe this why does everybody believe this Bitcoin is so straight? I mean, why are people so...
I don't. So, I don't see how anything is straight. By the way, my back-of-the-napkin math says that if Tesla bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin and they're 40,000 a coin, that would be 37,500 coins.
How could you even buy that many?
I don't know.
All at one time from people.
I don't know, but, that's... If my math is right, that's a lot of coins.
Our buddy Lou, he doesn't do it anymore since Maddie's matured so much. He used to accuse Maddie of being a moral relativist, right, back in the day.
Please.
And Maddie, of course, always bristled at that, but
as you should, man.
As you should. But help me here, Maddie. When people start talking about constitutions and they start talking about the process, I'm not going to say the millennials, these people are older than that. It's like they're a bunch of spoiled kids. They don't want the process affecting what they want to do at all. I mean, you look at every single governor after the emergency declaration is good for 30 days, not one of them actually thinks they should go to the legislature and get the thing extended by the legislature like that Constitution calls
people
for.
People only cite the Constitution if they think it benefits them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they don't. I mean, that's obvious. And I completely side with John and other folks that think this impeachment is a waste of time. I don't get it. What's the point?
Let me ask you this. Why don't we just censure the guy for saying that was the dumbest thing anybody ever did? I mean, we can censure somebody, right?
What does that entail? I don't know.
You basically say you're an idiot. What'd you do that for? I mean, it goes on record.
They condemn behavior, yeah. You know. And you show that the next time around, anybody who attempts something like this will be sterner with, or you if you attempt it again too. You know, you got to believe Tom. I mean, to me, it makes it look like the Democrats still fear that Trump is the president yet. Otherwise, why would you go through this? They're almost making everybody's conspiracy theory look like a reality. So,
I think it's more they're afraid that he's going to run again in 24 and win.
Well, there's still
right, and that's the flip side of it too. That this is a way of, you know, preventing somebody from, you know, obtaining that office again.
But isn't
that a bad precedent for impeachment too? Because then you're really just telling the voters your vote doesn't count here. We make the decision who's a candidate or who isn't, and that's destructive too.
John, isn't not being able to take office again? Isn't that a separate vote? It's not. Just booting somebody out. I'm going to go back to the
right. I mean, it would have to be, and then I haven't read the articles closely enough. But in the final vote, I mean, there would have to be a specific statement that he's debarred from, you know, holding this office, and they could craft it any way they wanted, any office, city council person in Miami if they wanted to write it that way. That's another problem with using impeachment as such a dire remedy to just block somebody from running for office. I think, you know, the two competing impeachment clauses are, you know, this is one of the problems with the whole process. One says only a president, you know, guilty of bribery, high crimes, misdemeanors, and the other one is, you know, about disbarring somebody from taking that office again, and the two are not really linked together.
No, they aren't. As I'm saying, they're not linked together. Right?
And when you try to do it for, you know what the president claims is exercise of free speech, and then you turn it into something that makes you a pariah politically, that's a pretty warped use of impeachment. I mean, I don't believe that most people would think that that's way you treat voters. Who cares how you're treating the candidate at that point? You're telling the voters that you do not participate in this process, and your choice here is what we're trying to kill. I find that truly disturbing and dangerous, because now you've got people disenfranchising voters willy-nilly just because you disagree with their politics. And we're really down a rat hole then that we can't climb out of, if that's the case.
Why, after all this time, and again, I try and be... you know, I don't know what the pointy ear is, but I try and be like Spock. Even if I don't agree with somebody, I try and understand where they're coming from. What is it about the current group of Democrats? And again, I used to be one, and would love to be again if the party ever straightened themselves out. What is it with the current group of Democrats? They refuse to understand the Trump phenomenon. And because they don't understand it, they either fear it and can't compete with it. I mean... But it's easy to understand. It's a whole bunch of people that have gotten screwed in life over a period of time by a lot of governmental policies and can't stand the people that are in Washington. Why is that so hard to understand? And now,
that's clear. You know, that's exactly it, Tom. You know, you have to think that it's because they see all too clearly that they're the ones held responsible by the Trump supporters, and that they have much to fear from somebody like Trump not playing by their rules. And you got the same thing with the rhinos, Romney, and these other clowns, who are just as fearful as the Democrats are that they can be exposed. I mean, they've got dirt. I mean, people say Trump has dirt, and of course he does. But the Democrats, as a group, have a lot to be fearful of having exposed.
Well, Trump
represents that threat.
Trump had a lot of disgusting dirt, but none of it had to do with Washington. There's a big difference.
Right, absolutely.
And I mean, Manny's going to accuse me, but I'm no supporter of the man. But his dirt was his whole life. It wasn't like he got to Washington and got rich. It was all the other crap he pulled before him, but which I don't agree with any of it, really, screwing people out of paint contracts and things like that. But it's not like he's a Nancy Pelosi that showed up there poor and then walked away rich. I mean, the Washington dirt where you put this in a bill and you got paid for it. Trump does not have a Janet Yellen dirt where she gets $250,000 for somebody to now she's going to investigate.
Right, and you've got, you know, Pelosi and her father, D'Alessandro, who completely wrecked the city of Baltimore and just walked away from it. You've got generations of these boobs.
On both sides of the
air. American cities into total disaster areas, and they just keep making more money.
And they look in the mirror and they think that they're sacred, that they're fine. Everybody loves them. I'm like, really?
And the one who's saying that they aren't, Trump, is their biggest threat.
Yeah.
And the people who vote for Trump. And would clear, you know, the fact that Trump got impeached, you know, a year ago didn't affect any of the Trump support that he got in the last election. And we can fight for weeks on how big that support really was, but it clearly was increased by the impeachment. It didn't deter
without a doubt, without a doubt,
from questioning voting for him again. And what will this impeachment do? It will make all those people more firmly convinced than ever that they've been defrauded by a bunch of idiots. So we're not going to have anything close to any bipartisanship on any level with this kind of crazy stuff going on. And the Democrats will reap a whirlwind, I'm afraid, before they're through. And if they see it coming, that, you know, they could do something to stop it. They don't seem to care. They've got too much at stake to even worry about backing off on this because they know that they're that vulnerable.
I'm curious, and one of these days, I mean, if, who knows, maybe in the next life, I'll somewhat understand. When you've got this bill that comes out there, just pick this one, this $1.9 trillion, what is it that causes the news media? Is it, they were doing this even before, you know, Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post. What is it the media, is it controlled by, I won't say, you know, because some of them are on the left and some are on the right. Murdoch owns Fox, right? So, I mean, it's not like there's not a bunch of right-wingers that own papers, too. I mean, there's left-wing. But is it the lack of competition in the industry? Is it something where you can go down this list of this, you know, $1.9 trillion, and I sent it to everybody. And of course, I, you know, forget part of it. But I go down in there. Here's the parts that I pick out and go, wait a minute, how much for what? I mean, does anybody even realize, I mean, I think probably, but there's so much stuff you try and remember. How can you when you got like a life to lead? The last fiasco under Trump when they sent all the money around, with all the stuff that people are getting PPP loans that I won't say didn't deserve it, but you look at them and they say, well, gee, the garbage company in XYZ Village, they never missed a day. And how the hell did they get a PPP loan that was forgiven? But they did. The way it was written, they qualified, and they didn't do anything wrong. You know, it should have been written differently, maybe. But, and then people got checks, and everybody is bitching a blue streak about some guy or some lady who didn't deserve a check. Hey, what'd they get a check for? They got these capital gains, they got this, they own this place. You know, they got no more money than got. This kind of stuff. But somehow or another, either they don't understand, which is what Cheryl Atkins' story is, and by the way, I love her, so she's probably right. But somehow or another, they don't get the fact that entire mess, the PPP and the individual checks, I think John and Maddie was 25, certainly less than 30% of the total amount of money. And nobody zeroes in on the other 75%. It's just like off the table. Now, part of it is human nature. You care more about the guy down the block getting something because that you can get your arms around. But did anybody even, why can't somebody on CNBC and Fox on CNN say, hey, by the way, here's another 25%. We got this airline getting dough. And by the way, the chairman's still making, you know, $10 million a year and we're paying for it. I mean, I don't see any breakdown of the other stuff at any sort, at any level, either written, I'm not reading everything there is, but I don't see any breakdown. We're so happy to argue about the PPP and we're arguing about the checks home. We don't even care about the rest. I mean, nobody wants to dig into how much we're paying for masks when you can get, you know, whatever, 30 of them for 10 bucks at Walgreens or, I mean, at Sam's Club. I mean, there's no either push or either somebody's telling people not to, or if you actually wrote that article, you get tossed like our friend Pedro. I mean, what is it? Are people afraid to do it, or is there just too much money behind it? Or, I don't think you're tapping people on the back with a baseball bat saying the next tap is on your knee like we used to, but somehow or another, something's not right here. I don't know what it is. I get my finger on it.
Well, part of the problem is, I think, is at least for the last 50 years, has been the way the media is owned and managed, that these are businesses. They are not journalists. Their stock is traded. They've got their fingers in all sorts of unrelated businesses and wealth-making opportunities, and it becomes impossible for them to run a somewhat even-handed media company when they've got their fingers in so many profit centers that when they start carrying bad news or start exposing bad behavior, it doesn't come back and bite them. So it's like I watched Network again, this 1976 Sidney Lumet, Patty Chayefsky film the other night, and that movie gets more hair-raising to me every time I see it because it shows how it's all just about the money, and it's not about the news, and it's not about doing what's right. It's all about protecting your own corner of whatever market, and you get fewer and fewer people, fewer and fewer media companies, and these giants that Disney and Time Warner, all these, they have nothing to do with news anymore. So what does the news become? It becomes their megaphone for protecting themselves, and then it's just getting worse. The newspapers are maybe the most obvious example of it, but there's fewer newspapers than ever too. Then you look at the television and the entertainment industry, and they're all bollocksed up together. You're not going to get any dispassionate news or investigative journalism out of outfits like that.
Well, then they come out with a story that, we don't have the money to do this stuff, but I don't... I mean, we had Dan Janitis was on Thursday, and he one of his recommendations, again, I it's his, I haven't really looked at it, is Tribune Publishing. Jan, what's left of Tribune Publishing? I didn't want to ask Dan that, but I mean, who, after Zamzel vilified the place, or not vilified, chopped it apart,
destroyed it. Just destroyed the workers' lives in the process too.
How much money? Whatever happened to the? He used the workers' Keel plan to buy the place. Now,
right.
did they
leverage it? Yeah.
But did those people? Did they lose their Keel plan?
Yeah. The pensions were if not wiped out, they were completely axed and cut.
How was that guy not in jail?
Well, this is kind of a discussion in a real world where people knew this even happened. You would have some kind of reprimand process, but this is just the normal way of doing things. And he's praised in lots of corners, and you hear the good things about what he did. How do you really get a handle on what he actually committed in doing what he did? So
well, the weird part of this, Matty, you were probably too young, but the interest if you think for a second, and you could argue both ways, that your stock market is the pricing system of companies. Okay, now. You see, people will say, "Hey, Flanagan Inc. is trading for $50. The breakup value is 70." That's always interesting because, like, what makes you the god of value that you got 90 bazillion people trading the thing back and forth during the day, and the market price is 50, but you happen to know it's really worth 70? I always wondered on that exactly who these people are that can will tell you this. But the Tribune and who's the guys that had the they've got the Cantini. Didn't they own a lot of the Tribune?
Oh, McCormick, yeah.
Yeah, McCormick owned a lot of the Tribune. And so the stock is trading. Some of the family claims they want out. The stock's trading like 36, Matty. And the family, they end up getting all this money from the Keel plan and everything else, which means the employee pension fund. Which it's not really the pension fund. A Keel's different than a pension fund, John, but it escapes me what the different. The Keel is... it's the employee's money, right?
Self-managed, I think.
But it's managed by... It's different than the pension fund that Pullman had, a Keel plan. This is a question for my brother more than me. A Keel plan, the Pullman pension plan was Pullman financed the whole thing. And that's what the firms used to have. It was a defined benefit plan that Pullman paid into. Because Robin was on the board of the darn thing. That's different than a Keel plan. I could have put together a Keel plan for all the people that traded for me. It was like an IRA for your company.
Right.
But anyway, they took some of the. But the weird part is the pricing of these people, McCormick and their trust or whatever that wanted out, they got out for the same price it was trading at. Now, me being a guy trading on the floor, if you want out, you're getting out at the same price it's trading. Just sell it. That's what the market's for. Why did he have to go through this massive iteration? What it ended up is he ended up with the voting rights of all these other people with somebody else's money. But if McCormick really wanted, if you lined up 20% of the people, now you couldn't do it that day, that just don't want any part of Ford, okay? All right, over the next year, you can sell the Ford. That's what the market's for. Where am I wrong here?
You're absolutely right. What the market's for.
Yeah, so the market. I mean, that's why you have a stock market, for God's sake. You know, so I mean, I don't get it. But somehow he was able to pull that off. But yeah, I mean, unless to get back to the impeachment story, unless people understand the Trump phenomenon, and the people that I know that are, you know, they're not even so Trumpies, but they're Trumpies for the concept of Trump. They're not Trumps. They're not. Let's put it this way: I'd love to have a beer with George Bush. I was never a political fan of his, but I think he's a guy I can sit there and talk to about the rain. None of these people want to sit down with Trump for more than a second. Why would you? The guy's a disgusting human being. I mean, right? I mean, at least it seems that way. I'd have no idea. What am I supposed to ask the guy about the three people I knew that he sniffed and they made him swim? What am I doing? Have that conversation with the guy? What do I have in common with Trump that I want to stand in a second with the guy? Right? I mean, not so sure I do with Biden. I mean, Obama, at least you could have a conversation about South Side, but I mean, I don't know. Out of all those people, the only one I probably feel comfortable sitting with is George Bush. Clinton, you never know. You count your fingers, I'd have to shake hands, I'd have to count, you know, type of thing. But I mean, how long was the Democrat or the Republican Party worried about Hillary? Are they finally put her to bed that she's 100 years old now, or what? Are they still afraid of her?
Well, she's still shooting her mouth off, I'll say that.
Well, I mean, you're never going to shut these people up, but I mean, but she's no force anymore.
Oh, I think there's still the Clintons and their ilk, and, you know, the Obama. I mean, the Clintons and the Obama have never been very good bedfellows, you know, over time, but they generally, I think, cooperate when they have to, and they both hold their respective noses in doing it. But I think there's still a huge force to be reckoned with, and the fact you've got Susan Rice, you know, practically, you know, behind Biden and everything he does here makes me think that they're far more powerful than the media will ever admit or let you think.
Well, the Obamas, I think, are seriously powerful. I don't think the Clintons are anymore.
Well, it's all, to me, it's morphed. I mean, the Clintons pretty much converted the Democratic Party to their own, you know, private think tank. And, their faction and the Obama faction have always been somewhat opposed, but they have never ceded power completely to each other. So you've got people who are still Clinton diehards who despise Obama and vice versa. And that, I think, is just going to go on probably, you know, long after Chelsea Clinton is dead, the rate they're going.
Well, I mean, that's probably true, but I think the Obamas are way much tighter this group than the Clintons are. I mean, when they lost...
Well, Biden is closer, of course, to Obama than he ever was, you know, to the Clinton faction. I mean, this is, you know, I think becoming pretty clear in the cabinet appointments that, you know, Biden has made, that, you know, this is going back to the Obama, you know, stable of people, and so it's just, you know, Obama term three, really, and the Clintons, they're trying to get rid of them as much as they can and keep them in the background, but I still believe that they wield tremendous power and tremendous
I think the Michelle Obama-Valerie Jarrett duo is behind a boatload of these picks of Biden's. I don't think Hillary...
Probably behind all of them, I think, Tom, really. I mean, I don't think Biden can do anything without their approval, so...
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Valerie's still involved. I mean, you don't know who these people are behind the scenes. I mean, you elected Bush, you never realized that Cheney and Rumsfeld were really the power. I mean, some people did, but speaking of the power, you'll know the answer to this question. Who essentially interviewed George Bush for the president job? I'll give you a hint, he just croaked.
Oh, George Shultz.
Yeah.
100 years old. Right?
Yeah, 100 years old. And, but he was the guy who, and again, I'm gonna have to, if I can find it, buried in my place. I don't think the making of the president that year ever came out, even though they did all the research. But what do you call it when your book kind of comes out before a big part of it before it comes out and then it never comes out? It was in, it's either in Newsweek or whatever. I've got, I should dig. I know I got it in my place someplace behind my four-wheel drive magazines, but it's there. And they talked about they couldn't stand the Clintons and they essentially interviewed for the job. And George Shultz had a bunch of guys in Texas, and he's a Texas guy, right? And, and he was, he interviewed me. They thought that Bush would be the best guy because he was, you know, likable. He'd owned a baseball team. And if they could just put a line in the sand, we're not talking about anything after 40. The guy had the nice looking wife that he never seemed to look at anybody else and wasn't a boozer anymore. anything like that, that they thought he would win. And they raised $35 million for him when that was a lot of money. And they did all that for him. But George Shultz was on. I used to take my mom to breakfast every Saturday morning. It was a Saturday show. You know, it might have been a Sunday because once in a while I go on Sunday. And they had him on one of the talk shows. And he was saying, and he was a pretty straight guy. I mean, I think a pretty bright guy too. I mean, he's a guy you'd want in your cabinet for sure. You want on your side. I don't think he didn't know.
Oh, he was a survivor. You know, he learned ways of working with pretty much anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of skill, a lot of talent too. You know, and that's a very smart politician, I think.
Well, and one of the formative things for my total conspiratorial bent on who gets all these information, how much money. I mean, I think this guy Mnuchin. I'll bet he profited. But he was with this think tank. And Janet Yellen gets the job for the Democrats, and I'm all over that. Mnuchin got the job because when he left Goldman, he was with some private placement place. Didn't they loan Trump a whole bunch of money for one of his buildings when he was going under? So, I mean, and he ended up with the Treasury Secretary job. Now, when there's...
That's the same thing with Tim Geithner.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a whole... They're like ambassadorships. They could have these... Cabinet jobs are pretty much favors to people who have either bankrolled you or propped you up or mentored you or something else, and this is, you know, how you keep the people closest to you nearby.
Yeah, but if you the amount of money you can make knowing the next week that you're a big buyer of securities and money's flowing into the system versus flowing out, John, the average person, I don't even come close to the number of how much I think it is, and I'm not average when it comes to that. I mean, at least I know that there's... I mean, you look at... What the market's done. You think it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that every week these guys are buying assets? What are they buying? Who are they buying them from? But anyway, George Shultz is on, and the guy says to him, it was a guy back then, there weren't any ladies in those jobs, and some of the ladies now are better than those guys, I'll put it that way. But the guy says, Chairman, or Mr. Secretary, when you get a job like that, he says, I've always been curious. Who gets, like, the labor numbers or stuff before they go out? And Shultz, honest, relatively honest, or else he thought nobody was listening. We're like, Bob Uecker, what the hell? Nobody's listening anyway. he says, funny you should mention that. And all of a sudden, now I'm all ears, right? And he goes, when I got the job, I said, by the way, he goes, obviously the president has to know. You can't have the president walking out to his helicopter and say, hey, what about those labor numbers? And he goes, what labor numbers?
Uh-huh.
he can't do that. He goes, I get this huge list of people. And I'm going, why do all these people need to know all these numbers? So I start knocking people off the list. He goes, it was the hardest thing I ever tried to do politically, and after about 3 weeks, I gave up. And I'm sitting there going, he didn't just say that, but he did. And you can understand why I would remember that.
Well, could you imagine anybody getting an opportunity to say that again or answer any sensitive question that way today and not be cut off at the legs?
Oh, yeah.
Or humiliated or fired or whatever else.
So he's basically, now I will say that if you gave me the labor numbers, I would probably bleep up half the time on trading before him. I think those things are totally non-tradable. I mean, I don't, but because I have no idea what people's reaction to it going to be. And same thing on kind of corporate earnings, because you never know what the phone call is going to say. But if you start talking about stuff coming out of the Treasury and those kinds of things, and we're not going to we're not going to raise interest rates anymore. We're going to loan. God, John, those are 10% moves in the market, for God's sake. Those are big numbers. The amount of the speeches people give, you know, over in China at 3 in the morning when we don't go to China anymore, when we did, all of a sudden guys are going to say, oh no, we're going to be very dovish and going forward. I mean, those are market turning events. If you have those, an orangutan can make money. I mean, who's kidding who? I mean, so there's incredible amount of, what do you think these big firms do? All they do is front run. I mean, it's the Treasury calls up and says, I want to buy $40 billion worth of bonds today. Okay, you know, we'll find them for you and sell them to you higher. This is that, but these guys, they think it's their due. They don't even think there's anything wrong with it. But, you know, what causes people to focus in on stuff is always a fascinating thing to me. And I learned that when I was on the board. You could cause people to focus in on something totally useless, and yet the big elephant in the room you never even discuss.
Well, and take the labor statistics as an example.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to put some stock in the numbers every month about jobs lost or jobs added. I hope, you know, those numbers are dependable at a certain level. But when that translates to an unemployment rate, that then becomes this, you know, figure that's, you know, quoted endlessly and measured against previous months. To me, that statistic is utterly useless. It has nothing to do with the number or the percentage of the population that's unemployed, just because the number has been twisted in such a way that it's not an accurate number by anybody's imagination. And yet it becomes the way all this data is digested, this becomes the thing that is used in, you know, whether the economy advances or retreats. And I just think, well, you know, if you start out with good raw data, why do you have to corrupt it into something idiotic like a bogus unemployment number? Unless you're really, you know, worried that the story that the data tells you is not one that's going to fly. So you have to cushion it in a way that makes the problems look far smaller than they really are.
Well, people do that with a lot of numbers. I mean, here's a story. The man's name will go nameless, but I think my first economics course at Notre Dame, let's just say that it was a less politically correct era, and the guy who teaching the class was known as the egg, because he, let's just say, Matt, he had a 44 hourglass figure with 45 minutes on the bottom or something along those lines. So he was known as the egg, even though that wasn't his
stand up.
Anyway, so first class ever in economics, the guy says something effective. And then we got this unemployment number, the dumbest number that anybody ever puts out. He goes, yeah, everybody looks at it. That was that 50 years ago? Close.
That's when it actually meant something. Though.
Yeah, that's what it might actually mean. Now, this number is useless. Here it is. Here I am on a podcast, you know, decades later saying the number is useless. So the number that's even more useless, and that we hear every day, is the amount of positive tests on this COVID. When you can't I get the part that there's 5,000 people that have COVID today, and there's 6,000 tomorrow, or 7,000, or it goes down. I get that part. That's significant in some way. But when you just let random people show up in their car, and 100,000 people show up, and there's 5,000 positive tests, and there's 95,000 people that showed up for whatever God knows what reason their firm told them to go, and the next day only 95,000 show up, and you still have 5,000 positive tests. How does the amount of people that tested negative have anything to do with the amount of people that are positive?
What if those people are just driving around in a big loop and coming back in for another test too? There's no protection against that happening.
Well, that's exactly right. And what are we doing? Plus, the people that have already had it and go get the test too soon to where the test is positive, even though they don't have it anymore. What is that doing to anybody? The idea it'd be different if you went out and specifically did a random sample. And every day the state went out and identified 5,000 people and tested them. And every week that number was going up or down, that would be significant. But just to let 100,000 people have nothing better to do, they probably have something better to do, but it's a nice day or whatever, and they go out and get what that tells you, I have no idea. The amount of people that are positive is a real number. Okay? But with the amount of people that just happen to be there, 100,000 one day, 95,000 the next, how does that affect anything?
It's and like, when people say, you know, follow the science, that isn't science we're talking about at
no.
all.
But it's like the unemployment number. I mean, and
right,
I,
it
and,
is, yeah.
And Carl says, but the constant shove back and forth is between the amount of people, and it makes it even worse, because I have a feeling, John, that back in, well, in our day, I remember when I got booted from Pullman, when I didn't personally get booted, the placement went out and everybody got booted. Well, I guess I personally got booted. They gave me, but then they hired me back as a consultant, so I guess I was a boot they took back, right? If that's even a phrase. So, In theory, you're supposed to be looking for a job, right? Now, in those days, I think you had to check in to the unemployment place. Now, they didn't for Pullman, because they told us, hey, look, we know they laid off, 2,000 people, so we're not going to chase anybody down. So I was only unemployed for, I'm going to say, 3-4 weeks before I got hired back as a consultant. So, and I barely got two checks from my Uncle Jim Thompson at the time. And this is, this is back in 1979 or something. And so it was, that number maybe meant something, because the idea is, the definition is, somebody unemployed is out of work, not for his own reason, he got laid off, and oh, by the way, he's looking for a job. The minute he stops looking for a job, he's no longer unemployed. Correct?
Right.
So, but in the meantime, the bureaucrats got lazy. Imagine that. Instead of tracking people down and making people report, which I think you're still supposed to do online somehow, Maddie.
Online, yeah. It's been that way even before the lockdown.
But the idea being is that if they're paying you, and normally it's what, 26 weeks, Jen, until the federal government kicks in, and if they say we're going up to 39, the federal government has to come up with that money, correct? Not the state, as
right.
I recall. So now, if you just roll off the rolls after 26 weeks, you're just gone and you disappear. They're going to count you as no longer
right. You're employed now. Somewhere.
No, they're going to put you as in the column number 3, not in the labor force. They don't know what you're doing. So there's employed, there's unemployed, and the people who don't know what they're doing. And the people who don't know what they're doing is like 100 million people, which is way higher than it used to be. There's the big slap in the system.
And they never figure in the unemployment number.
No, they never figure in the unemployment. So a lot of times you'll see the amount of people unemployed drop by 500,000, and the people who don't know what they're doing goes up by 500,000. So you haven't got any place, right? Really. S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 56. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Mel Weber. Also, Mr. Mike Hart with us as well. SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 56. Dow Futures up 152 is the last week following the horrible week. Not a good week. Seems to be going to continue here, at least for a while. In Europe, there as well. We got the DAX is up. European markets higher, tracking positive global sentiment. Dialogue surges 17%. What's dialogue? Do you guys have any idea? DAX up 66.5%, FTSE up 69, that's a full 1%. CAC around up 53, that's pretty much a full 1%. So the DAX was up way more than the rest of the guys on Friday, so now they're catching up. Asia, Nikkei up 600, 2%. Shanghai up 36, that's 1%. Hang Seng up 30, that's 0.1%. Asia Pacific stocks mostly rise. China announces new anti-monopoly rules aimed at tech giants. Why don't they have an anti-monopoly rule aimed at their government? How's that for a thought? Bonds, 10-year 1.19, so let's keep creeping up. The Bund, minus 0.42, that's the highest least negative we've seen there in a while. Japan, look at a load of this, Mike, 0.067. And when, I don't know when we've seen that high. Oil, up 76 cents, 57.61. Brent up 81 cents, 60.15. Natural gas up 6 cents, 2.92. RBOB up 2 cents, 166. We got gold is up 11 bucks now, 18.24. Silver up 15 cents, which I sure could have used Friday, 27.17. Copper up 1 cent, 3.63. Whoever said timing is everything is correct. Mike, what do you think?
That's right.
We have Mr. Mike?
Are you throwing it to me or what?
Oh, I was I'm going to throw it to you first. Timing is everything for you too, yeah. like on passes and like on everything.
Yeah. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning. once again to everyone out there. We do have a couple of issues on a Monday morning here after the Super Bowl. I-57 southbound at 111th. There's a car in the ditch that has crews working to get that out, and that's causing some delays on the outbound I-57. No issues on the inbound side. Bishop Ford and the Ryan are looking good. We had a water main break earlier this morning on the Stevenson inbound side at California. That has the right lane closed with crews on the scene. They're expected to be on the scene all day today working to get that water main fixed and cleaned up. And that's causing significant delays as it has all morning already on the Stevenson. It looks like it's up to 49 minutes now on the Stevenson from I-355 to Lakeshore Drive. 40 minutes from the Tri-State. So the right lane will be closed for most of the day. So you want to avoid the inbound Stevenson. A lot of red right now on I-55. Outbound side looks okay. On the Eisenhower, we have a crash as well. It's now on the left shoulder on the inbound side just before Harlem. Route 390 to the old post office is 36 minutes. From Wolf Road, it's 24 minutes. So stop-and-go traffic on the Ike as well. Kennedy and Eden's still looking okay, although there's an issue on the Eden's outbound at Foster, a stalled vehicle on the off-ramp there. So you have to navigate around that if you're getting off at Foster on the Edens. But inbound and outbound Edens are looking okay. Off the expressways, Mannheim Road is closed between Armitage and Grand Avenue due to a structure fire and investigation. And then out in the western suburbs, North Avenue is closed between Glen Ellen and Bloomingdale due to a crash. And just north of there in Carroll Stream, Army Trail Road at Bloomingdale, there's an accident there as well. So all kinds of little crashes and bang-ups throughout the area, so give yourself plenty of time. It's pretty foggy out there, and snow is coming this afternoon. We could get 1 to 3 inches more. I thought when it was really cold, it didn't snow, Chief. When did that change?
A little bit. You get the what do they call them, the clippers?
Yeah, so yeah. 1 to 3 more inches on top of the ice that you already have, and a high of just 15 today with wind chills in the single digits. Right now it's overcast and 6 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 76. Right now it's clear and 47. In sports, Tampa Bay is your 2021 Super Bowl champions. They got a lead early and then piled on and had no trouble with Kansas City, winning 31-9. Tom Brady's 7th Super Bowl championship. Tampa Bay's 2nd Super Bowl championship as a franchise. Tampa Bay, the city, is having quite the run. The Lightning won the Stanley Cup. The Rays made it to the World Series, won the pennant. And now the Bucks have won a Super Bowl. That's a pretty good run.
That's a pretty good run, is right.
During COVID, yeah. Basically. Yeah, congrats to Tom Brady and the Bucks. NBA basketball, Bulls were off last night. They'll host Washington tonight at 7 p.m. Suns beat the Celtics 100-91. And in hockey, it was the Blackhawks beating the Stars 2-1. James.
Hey, the Cubs won the World Series. Was that the same? The Hawks won the Stanley Cup that year?
No. The Hawks won in 10, 13, and 15, I think. The Cubs won in 16.
16, all right.
Yeah.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic. How's it going, Chief?
All right. Hey, speaking of light snows on the roadways, I drove out to Orland Saturday night. So the... It's about the hardest thing for the guys with the, you know, the snow blows and stuff to deal with. I don't have to plow, and I might have been too cold to salt. But
do you have rear wheel drive or do you have front wheel drive?
It depends on what I have it in.
Oh, okay. Well, you have the option. That's good.
I have a big Suburban with the 4-wheel drive.
All right, you should be safe. But keep going with your story.
Well, actually, you know what? When it's like that, to be honest, to be safe, I should have winter tires. Because of the
those are ideal. Yeah, I grew up. I'm an expert in snow tires just because I grew up in Buffalo, New York.
Well, in those days, when I was young, it was long before you. But you got snow tires. You put them on the rear, and I bet you're the only guy. I'm going to say Maddie doesn't know this, but how does a snow tire actually work? The old kind.
Well, the old kinds that I had, they had spikes, but they weren't very prevalent. They weren't sticking out type spikes.
Oh, you had the studded snow tires. Okay.
They're studded snow tires. Right. So they just added additional traction, but as far as the physics behind them, I just would have thought that additional traction was the way that they worked, but it sounds like there might be something else at play.
Well, there's then and then there's now. In those days... The trick with a snow tire is not the big thread, but it's the way the thread was designed. The thread would actually grab the snow, and when you hit the ground, it was snow on snow, and snow actually sticks to other snow.
Uh-huh.
But the trick is, have you ever noticed a snow tire? The guy's going through the snow. There's all this stuff flying around. The idea is that the snow tire sheds the snow on the way up, so on the way back down, it does it all over again. It doesn't just jam up in the cleats. Jam up in the cleats and stay there. It's always new snow on other snow. But now the key is, now you want to put them on all four wheels, and this is what you would have needed Saturday night, is the composition's totally different of the tread. The one that's probably the best, although, you know, who knows, it's not a commercial, but the people who did this first were the Blizzaks. They're made by Bridgestones. And what they do is they used to crush something and actually put it in the rubber. So if you rub your hand over it, it was rough.
So, that's rough is good.
And
I know
so actually, they're not as big of a cleats as the old snow tires would be. But the object is, on ice, they're 100% better. And so you won't slide out. And so even the Suburban, I could have used those tires the other night. But get a load of this. Maddie was just talking about it. Hubbard's Cave, of course, is I can't get through downtown. All of a sudden, I see all these fire trucks, a couple of ambulances. This is where the most you could go is maybe 40 miles an hour if there's nobody around you. I mean, it was slippery. It was snow. So, of course, I see this accident. One car is on its side, and they've got all and they got about 10 firemen trying to work to get the people out of the car. I said, how the hell do you roll over when everybody should be going 25 miles an hour at the most because it was jammed? That somehow or another they did it. Hey, let's not worry about that. I hope the guy's okay or the ladies. What's going on with the market? And how do you contrast? How do you? How's the question to lead into you? We always talk about volatility, and you correctly predict that when the volatility level's high, the likelihood of the market jumping around that week, that month is always higher. Yet some of the biggest moves in the market, Mike, have always been when the volatility is at its lowest. The black swan events and so forth. How do you, I guess, sometimes the market's not such a good predictor of a big move.
And, well, yeah, you know, part of the way volatility operates is it sort of has this backwards-looking mentality, but it doesn't look back all that far, and it looks relatively recently, and it can be very short-sighted at times. If there's a move that's relevant in a short period of time, then volatility is going to spike. That's just the way it works. But if there hasn't been a move for a long time, this is actually doesn't increase volatility typically. It actually decreases volatility, which is what we're actually seeing after last week kind of calmed down a little bit. We saw volatility start to come in. We were up in the 30s last week. Now we're at the 20s.
Right.
When you talk about big moves like last year back in March, heck, we were trading around 10 in the VIX when the move came. So we were at all-time lows. And then you get these huge moves no one expected, and VIX goes off the chart. I think we went up to 80 at that point in time. So it's one of those things where complacency is just the market saying, hey, we're just going up every day. We're not really worried about the downside. Volatility comes in real low, and then all of a sudden, that's when you get the big move.
Well, how do you I trade silver, and I'm obviously very pissed off this morning because I had a nice butterfly on it, the 25 strike, that, of course, the thing went out at like 25.02 or something.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Now, this morning, of course, it's 25.35, so I mean, it would have been nice this morning. But it's been, I've never seen silver move like this, but it won't break out of a range. I mean, and gold's the same way. I mean, gold's 1790 to, I'm going to say, 1950. And it's been violent in the range, but.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's volatile, but it's not. It's given me no hint that it's going to be 14 or 2500 anytime soon.
Right, and volatility is really high in silver. The IV rank, meaning where it's been last year compared to where it is now, it's at 35%. But this is taken with a grain of salt. 35% is really high in silver right now, and. I've never seen silver move in this large of a range. Silver's normally a quiet trade. I mean, last year we were trading, at like $13, $14,
yeah.
Just hanging out there every day. Now, a dollar move is not out of the realm of possibility every day, but we are in a range. We don't seem to be breaking out. There isn't a real good story, in my opinion, for why silver is this high. I there's sort of a flight to quality. I don't believe any of that Reddit stuff. So I'm not sure what's propping silver up so much. And I say that because I look at it through the relativity of gold. If gold was going off the charts higher, I wouldn't be surprised to see silver this high. But gold is sitting in a range, although it's a high range. It's nowhere near as high as the relative level of silver. So I think, if anything, silver might be higher priced and gold might be the lower price. So if I were going to trade these, I might do a silver-gold ratio, maybe sell one silver or sell two silver, buy one gold, something like that.
Two reasons why you might want to take a look at is, first they got caught a little bit with the Reddit thing because evidently there's some kind of a short in the SLV.
A short squeeze, yeah.
It's hard for me to know whether that's true or not, because the people that are short silver could actually be long silver at the market. They could actually have the physical.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
But here's the thing: we're starting to do. Actually, my brother's doing some of this. You might be interested. He's got a couple of clients that are putting together, and we're not involved in putting the thing together or anything like that. But a whole bunch of stocks that they think if we're actually moving forward in this electric car stuff. That the next 20 years might be a real nice little basket of stocks to have. Battery makers, this, that, and the other thing. But evidently, some of the newer technology battery, I'm not the chemist, somehow or another, there's silver used in that. And I don't know how much. I don't know if it's in the battery, if it's in the transformer, whatever it is. Don't buy or sell it based on what I'm saying. Somehow or another, the rumors are that it'll be more of an industrial demand for silver.
Interesting.
But,
well, that would make sense. That would actually make sense if something like that were the case.
Well, the one that I'm absolutely kicking myself on, if you were to say, if there was a trader's confessional, which I guess we all have, don't we?
In a way, yeah.
If I walked in and the priest said, "Oh, Tommy, what have you done this year?" "Ah, Father, what the hell? How did I not get along this FCX?" I mean, every spot, the thing traded like 4 hours last year, at the end of whatever it was, 2000 of the COVID thing, and or 5 hours. And it's mostly copper and some gold. I never could figure out how much was gold or copper, so I kind of lost track of it, because it used to be essentially the copper ETF before there was an ETF. I mean, that's all they did.
Correct, yep.
And I got to 15, and I'm going, I should get long this thing. But why? It's already come from 5 to 15. I guess I missed it. Then it got to 20. Well, now it's 3208. I still don't have share one of the damn thing. And I probably talk about the confessional. But the copper has driven their stock, for lack of a better term, up way more, because copper's gone from like 248 or 249 to what, 364, which is a huge move. But it's taken Freeport from like $8 to 30, you know, 32. You're way better in there than you were in silver or gold.
I think it's a great way to get access, or, you know, get yourself involved in silver or gold without actually going into the commodity. You know, using these companies that do well given a rise in the commodity price, Freeport's a great example. I haven't thought about that one in a while. It's definitely going back on my watch list, though, Chief. I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, now, of course, it's 32. I'd love to be long if I'm going, I'm sure not going to pay 32, so I still don't have it. But I got a question for you. You know, when I used to trade in the OEX pit, I mean, we still, because we had some people, my brother traded on a board of trade. And the gold and silver contract were always wearing the New York Merc, right? And this is before they all combined.
That's right.
But the Board of Trade had something called Kilo Gold. Remember that?
I don't remember that.
I don't know how long it lasted, but it was a smaller contract because they didn't want to leave the metals to the New York Merc. And I think I don't know if they had options on them or whatever. We thought about doing some stuff in there, so we used to follow it, you know, a little bit, the gold. And, well, of course, when I first started, it was the Hunt brothers going crazy on the silver. So there was always, you know, somewhat but when you started doing the gold stocks, and there was always it changes acronyms. It's not the name of the company. There's a Barrick Gold, and there's a couple others. But I always found it, you know, when I had positions in there, even though I was trading the OEX, that I always got, I won't say screwed, but I could never figure out how much the companies had hedged. Because for the listeners, what I'm talking about is if you're a corn farmer, okay, and you put your corn in the ground and it costs you, you know, $1.90 a bushel, and you see the futures run to $4, okay, and at the CBOT, the whole reason to having a corn futures contract is for you can essentially sell your corn forward at $4 and say, if I can get $4 out of this crop, I'm fine. Okay. So now if corn comes back down to $2, you only make $2 or a dime on your corn, but you make $2 on the future. The flip side of that is if it goes to $8, you're selling your corn for $8, but oh, by the way, you lost $4 on the future. So you can never figure out how much these gold guys had hedged. Same way with a farmer. Of course, you don't get to buy stock in the farmer, but
right, you know, just don't have a picture inside their actual working,
right,
you know, sheets exactly.
So you might have corn go to $15, and you run out to the farmer, and it turns out all his stuff is gone at $4. Okay, that type of thing. So you, some of these companies, you'd sit there and you'd go long Barrick Gold, and like gold's running up, and you go, man, my Barrick must be doing great, and it's not going anywhere, you know. And then all of a sudden they come out and say, well, we were 80% hedged. But then the next year we're only going to be 20% hedged. So, I mean, you have to know more about this stuff than just winging money around, you know, if you want
to
be successful.
That's a good point. One thing you could potentially look at, this is just a thought that occurred to me while you were talking, you could look at the volatility of the underlying. And let's say silver is trading at, 35 volatility right now. If Barrick Gold is trading for, say, a 70 volatility, then you can expect it to be twice as active. Now, directionally, I don't know. You would assume going higher for silver would be good for Barrick. So that's an assumption that you'd have to go with.
Well, it's never going to be bad for him. It's just a question of how much they left on the table, basically. And they would go for times. It was weird, Mike. If they really got, I'll use the term, screwed on their hedges, 1 year they'd go from 80% hedge. Just back when guys used to follow this and they would actually publish it. The next year they'd be like 0% hedge, and the thing would run down. they're just like regular traders, just like us. You know, oh man, I'm never going to sell calls again. The next year the stock goes straight down, right? I mean, it's one, you know, type of thing. So what is your Ouija board say now with the vol where it is and what you've been seeing? Where market's heading up, vol's going down as usual. You see places like Tesla going back to God knows what. By the way, did you see them? They bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin this morning. They just announced that Tesla's bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin.
I did not see that. Wow. What happened to Bitcoin?
It's up a little bit, but I mean, they didn't say this morning. They didn't actually. The article, I didn't read a detailed article where they said they bought it over the last 2 months, 1 month, 1 day.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know, Tesla being one of those companies that's a driver in the industry, it might be good news for Bitcoin. I can't say anything bad about Tesla because they seem to be doing something right. So it seems like an odd thing for Tesla to buy. I mean, was there any reasoning behind it?
It just came across. There's an article I haven't had a chance to dig through, but you know, some people. I knew somebody who a few years ago was doing some stuff overseas, go nameless. And they got paid in Bitcoin, and at the end of like the month, they were real sorry they did. You know, but now I guess, you know, you'd be happy if you did. I mean, I don't know. Who knows how long that'll last, but it's, some people now are, I love the part, talk about everybody who I have had on who's been a quote expert on Bitcoin says that the idea that it's not traceable, they can trace every single computer and phone it came from. If they actually want to find somebody, they could find you.
That's funny. I guess I didn't think about it like that.
Well, I mean, they're not going to dig into your password and your name, but, I mean, if I'm sitting here trading Bitcoin for my officer, they know where it came from.
That's true.
So
if you trade a futures contract, they know where that came from.
Sure, too. Sure. So what do you, right now, where would you put the state of the market? I mean, with all these people seemingly demanding the trillion nine. I mean, you could almost look at the last 2 weeks in the market was Republicans looking like they had a decent chance of cutting that down to less than half, and now it looks like it's going out full bore. I'm thinking that's why the market was down 1 week and up the next. Because now
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's what's driving the market. And, you know, the fact that we're making new highs again today, I think it's kind of the market dictating what is going to happen. And I'd be really surprised if this $1.5 trillion didn't go through. My prediction is we're going to see status quo for a little bit longer. We're going to see a market that's just inching its way higher, but I think we're getting closer and closer to that rubber band snapping at some point because, at the end of the day, you can't have a market that only goes one way forever into perpetuity. It's got to have a back and forth action. Last week was just a minor blip that we already saw volatility move 50% higher. So the market's anticipating something. It's just right now it's in a precarious state, I think, being this high.
Mike, what do you, fortunately for you, you're younger and we're not involved around and watching, I mean, you were on Earth, but weren't involved in the inflation stuff the last time to the extent that I was. The good news is I remember it vividly. The bad news is I'm one of a few. And nobody pays any attention to me. If all of a sudden, given the fact that there's no, I use the term, infrastructure on people's wages going up or anything like that, and certainly nobody's savings getting an interest rate that keeps you even on your value of your money.
Right.
What do you think socially happens if we actually have a published rate of like 6 or 8% inflation? I mean, in terms of just the fabric of society, the people who haven't gotten a raise in 20 years going, now what the bleep are you doing to me?
Yeah, it'd be like chaos. Like, we really don't want it to come to that, because the realization of no wealth is much worse than the slow trickle. And the fact of the matter is, like, I think inflation is a lot worse. I think a lot of people think it's a lot worse than it's being published. But if you move the numbers that fast, because at the end of the day, what we need is wage inflation. We need the people to catch up to the amount of inflation that we are going to see as a result of, you know, the past 2 years of spending. And in the foreseeable future, we're going to have to keep this sort of, I don't know, house of cards, I guess you could call it. We're going to have to keep it going for a little while longer to get ahead of this pandemic disaster. But who knows? I don't think if you publish something like that overnight, it would be pretty catastrophic, I think.
But everybody that I have, you know, a bunch of people that work here in the building and have done some work for me and so forth, that there are people that, you know, don't make that much money. They're workers. A lot of them are in the Hispanic neighborhoods and some, you know, other neighborhoods. They will tell me, that they say, I can't believe how much prices are up in the last 3 or 4 months. Just going to the store and doing this and, you know, how much my gas bill's up, my electric bill. People aren't that stupid. They know it. And how, how long do you think they can keep the lie going?
I mean, it, like, a little while longer, but at a certain point, it doesn't matter what they say the numbers is. Everyone's going to feel it the other way, which it sounds like they already are.
I think Mike Tarkey, are you tomorrow or are you or Jeff?
I think it's Jeff tomorrow, but we'll see.
All right, bud. Well, take care of yourself. Have a good week. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 60. 60 exactly. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.